time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hi, this is Lee Bockham. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast. I'm a full-time thriveologist and a part-time thrivalist. That means that I study thriving every day, and lots of the times I try to do the thriving myself. See, I understand that there's a difference between the world that says, you know, you've got to be a survivalist. But I have this idea of people who are thrivalist. People who are thrivalist are the people who think that in the end, everything's going to be okay. That in the end, they are going to know how to deal with things. That in the end, they're confident that no matter what comes at them, they can thrive. And as that, we're here to study how to do just that, how to thrive. And we've been doing a series on fear. So today we're going to continue that series by talking about some of the fears that pop into us. It's been said that we have three basic fears that we all carry within us that is deeply wired into us. Now, these aren't the fears like the fear of falling off of something or the fear of heights. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about those soul-wrenching fears. You see, that fear of falling, that's a survival mechanism. It's a mechanism to keep us from getting ourselves into trouble. So if we have a built-in fear of falling or a fear of snakes or some of those things that we understand as being a built-in fear reaction, then we're going to stay away from those things. We're going to stay away from the cliff. We're going to stay away from that rattling snake. We're going to stay away from the things that might be endangering us. But that's not the same as that soul-gripping, soul-rattling fear that we all have, not because of the deep place in our brain of survival, but in the top part of our brain that's all about thought and creativity and thinks us into trouble. In one of the podcasts, we talk about thoughts. And it was the podcast number 3, and that was talking about how our brain just creates these thoughts. Our mind is created to create thoughts. That's all it does. Good, bad, indifferent, it doesn't matter. It just creates thoughts. And the problem is we get wrapped up into those thoughts. We buy into those thoughts. We embrace those thoughts sometimes. And some of those thoughts are about fear. So last week I talked about the fact that courage is not acting in spite of fear. It's not acting without fear. It's not an absence of fear, but it's acting in spite of fear, that we choose to do something even when we have that fear. So I think that there are probably three different stages to this process. The first one that we have is fearful. We're full of fear. You know, we have this place where we're just full of fear. And what we want to be is at the stage of fearless. And let me suggest that that's a fictional state, that that is not a state that we're ever going to attain because we're just wired that way. Our mind is going to continue to have fearful thoughts. Our brain is continue to see threats around us. And so the idea of fear, of being fearless, to have no fear, is not going to happen. But what if we're fear-free? That means that the fears are there, but we're free from them. To be fear-free means that we're able to respond and react in a world regardless of what's going on in our fear system, that we find ways of moving forward when the fears are hitting us. So what are those three fears? The first fear is I won't have enough. Think about how deeply that's ingrained in us, that we fear that there's a lack. Now, I had a client at one point who came to me and he talked about how he was just so afraid that he was not going to be able to pay his bills. And he was almost incapacitated by thinking about his mortgage coming up and his monthly bills coming up. And so much so that he just felt like he couldn't get going in the morning. He just was overwhelmed with fear when he woke up. Now, there was one other piece I need to tell you about that client. He had $3 million sitting in a bank account. $3 million sitting in a bank account, living a fairly normal life. Not an extravagant house, not huge bills. It was not about whether he had enough or not. It's about how he felt about that. It's possible that we have this fear of not having enough when we have lots around us. It's completely disconnected from the reality of whether we have a lot or not. In fact, there are some people who don't have a whole lot, who manage to not let this fear grip them, that manage to keep moving forward. I would suggest that there are those for whom this becomes more and more of a fear as they get more and more around them. And the fact that we get more and more around us is often a representation of the fact that we have this fear, that we hold on to this stuff as a fear that we might need it someday. An extreme example of this is someone who hoards, someone who saves everything on the chance, the far-reaching chance that they're going to need that piece of trash down the road, that piece of wire, that whatever, they're going to need it. So they have the need to hold on to it just in case. But we all live somewhere within that of having it triggered. Now, I've been in enough places to know the desperation that people can get when that feels threatened, whether it's a realistic threat or not, when it gets threatened. And this is the same fear that marketers ply us with, that marketers try to get us to be caught up in, right? Because when they can trigger that place of fearing that we're not going to have enough, we will keep buying. We have just come out of Black Friday season, Cyber Monday, Black Friday. That was just a little bit ago. And so we all felt that desperation. And we saw the desperation in the videos of people charging into stores trying to get one or two things, right, that they didn't even need. Maybe it was going to be a gift, but it was one or two things or four or five things or 10 or 20 things that somehow we used to try to fill that hole within us that we're not going to have enough. A second fear is that we won't be loved enough. That's another place where we get trapped in that from very early on of fearing that those who love us won't be around or those that we love will not love us back. It's a common pattern in marriages for us to get wrapped up into the fact that we're not getting loved enough. And for 13 years, I've been on the internet offering people help and saving their marriage. And so I hear lots of stories on a daily basis, and this is one I watch get triggered on an ongoing basis, where they don't feel like they're going to be loved enough. And I have a theory that we marry somebody, we fall in love and we marry someone because we want to show them how much we love them. And as soon as we make that commitment, we begin to ask the question, how are you loving me? How am I getting the love I want? And suddenly we begin to have a tug of war, because what you'll notice is that this is about scarcity too. It's a scarcity of attention, scarcity of love, scarcity of getting somebody to give us energy towards us. There's the first two are bound in scarcity. I won't have enough. I won't be loved enough are bound in scarcity, that there's just not going to be enough. We humans are pack animals. The pack is how we find our sense of belonging. And we're always looking for who's in and who's out. And at the core of that is that place of, am I being loved? Brings in that question of, am I on the ins? Am I the one who's getting the attention, or am I the one who's on the outs? Now, there is also that idea of how we join with others that is really often about, what can I get from this? How can I get my needs met? How can I find a place of love? I've worked with many couples that were caught up in a dynamic where each was trying desperately to get the love from the other person, but was not willing to put it out towards the other person, was only wanting to bring it towards themselves, not extend love outside of themselves. And when that happens, the fabric of the marriage begins to break down, because it begins to be about a lack of connection. Not about connecting, but a lack of connection. Because you're judging, how much am I getting? How can I keep score of this? I'm putting this much in, but I'm not getting it out. Notice how we lie to ourselves. We act as if we're putting in and not getting out. In reality, what we're doing is judging how much is coming our way, how much we can get from the other person. It's about a lack of getting that attention, that love, getting that need met. And then there's the third type of fear, and that's that you won't be good enough. I won't be good enough. That rings in all of our heads. You know, we're often a society of achievers, of having to prove that we're good enough to the world. But you'll notice how this very fear of not being good enough begins to be intermingled with the other two. If I'm not good enough, then I'm not going to be loved enough. If I'm not good enough, I'm not going to get enough. And so it's a natural offshoot of a world that we come out of that's constantly judging, how good are you? Are you competent? Do you have the skills? Do you have what's necessary? And think of how often that is used in corporations, used in society, of judging whether somebody is good enough, whether somebody's done a good enough job. Now, the danger is going the other way and saying nothing matters about that. There's a danger in coming to the point of saying there is no such thing as skills and there's everybody is equal, which is one of the things we've done with childhood sports, that there are no scores, that there are no winners, that everybody's skill is the same. And yet, in every game I've been to that didn't keep score, every child knew the score and every parent knew the score, telling me that we are still wired to look for whether we're good enough and how to judge that, how to use an external reference point to judge. And that really is where we begin to get into the destructiveness of that fear. It's how we apply it to ourselves. We begin to apply a standard that is not equally distributed. We all are more harsh on ourselves than we are on looking at other people, on looking from the outside. We know what's going on the inside, and we use the inside judgment and project it onto others on the outside and always rate ourselves as lower, usually underestimating, because this is such a prominent fear in our lives. Now, many of us have one of these fears as a primary point, a primary motivator. The fear of not having enough may mean that somebody is working and working and working and finding two or three jobs or working long hours or doing all they can to get in, to get in, to get in, missing the fact that they're wearing themselves down by that. And then there are those who fear they're not going to be loved enough. And so they're constantly trying to create new relationships and find new friends and find new love and attract other people. And they're constantly trying to feed that need. Then there are those who are constantly worried about not being good enough. And so they're constantly looking for the next accomplishment, the next proof that they're good enough. Now, I can relate to that one in particular. I think I was pretty well loved in my family, so I didn't come out with any real needs for that. I felt confident in love. And I came from a very responsible household where I always knew that we had enough. We never had so much that we took it for granted, but I know that every month my father would say, you know what, we've been very fortunate. We have everything we need. And I had that as a constant message. But I grew up with dyslexia. I grew up working hard to try to make sense of why it was so hard for me to do the schoolwork. Until I figured out how to read based on that spot of difficulty, I struggled. And if you now look at my office, you would wonder if I continue to compensate with all the reading I do, with all the books that are on my iPad, with all of the books that surround me, with all of the reading I do. And you know what? I still read slowly. I watch my daughter and my wife read very quickly, and my son reads more quickly than I. But my wife will fly through a book, and I'll only be on the first chapter because I still work hard to read. So that's one of the places that I know I compensate. I have lots of letters behind my name, partly, I believe, to compensate for what I felt like I wasn't good enough. And I have lots of places I've done training to make sure I was good enough. That's the place that catches me. Where's the place that those fears catch you? What is your primary fear that grabs you and holds you? Is it about not having enough? Is it not being loved enough? Is it about not being good enough? Those are all basic fears that we all have, and the danger is when we believe them without questioning them. The danger is when we buy into them and try to stay away from having those fears touched upon. So how do you stay away? Well, some people, when they are fearing not having enough, they'll gather and gather and gather, or they'll work hard and they'll try to get promotions to get to the place where they have enough. And it's a constant running. Some people, when they want to be loved enough, they fear they're not going to be loved enough, find more and more and more relationships, or they just choose not to be in any relationship so they can't be hurt. Some people who fear they won't be good enough do everything they can to get new accomplishments and to gain new letters behind their names and new skill levels and new all those endorsements and all the other things that are out there for us to do. Others just give up to never have that fear touched. The fact is, we are often motivated by those fears. And the question is not, can we get rid of those fears? But can we understand that those fears are primal and often false? That they are pretending to be real in our minds? Remember, fear has been acronymed as false evidence appearing real. Fear, false evidence appearing real. That we look around and we try to find evidence that proves that we are not going to have enough, not going to be loved enough, and not going to be good enough. But it's false evidence almost always. And when we fall in the trap of looking for that, then we back away. There's this idea in our culture that you shouldn't be uncomfortable. If things are tough, they're not meant to be. I've heard it in marriage. I've heard it in lots of other things. You know, people say, you know, if you have to struggle in a relationship, it's just not meant to be. To which I ask the question, why do we get to that notion? Why isn't it about struggle? Because if I look at the real world, struggle is how growth happens. If I want to build muscle, I have to make that muscle struggle. I have to lift a weight and tear down the muscle a little bit so it grows. But our culture has gotten to the place where if it's a little uncomfortable, it may not be worth doing. Why? Because it keeps us away from being fearful. It keeps us away from that place of fear. So sometimes we have to say, you know what? I'm going to be uncomfortable. If I'm in a new relationship and trying to decide if this is a love I want, I'm going to be uncomfortable because that fear is going to be creeping around. If I lose a job or decide to change jobs, I might have that fear of not having enough. I might be uncomfortable. I've talked with people over and over who are choosing to leave one job to go to a lesser paying but much more meaningful job. And they have to combat that fear of not having enough with the notion that they are going to something that gives them another area of life, new appreciation of life, a deeper meaning, a deeper purpose in life. But they have to be able to deal with the fear of not having enough, of knowing it's there, knowing it's lurking behind them. There are those who have to start a new training program and begin to face that beginning place of not feeling competent, of I'm not going to be good enough, and do it anyway. And so all of those fears can lurk behind us and keep us from acting, or we can know about those fears and move towards them and make ourselves uncomfortable. Growth is always about some kind of struggle and some kind of discomfort. Every place in our life is marked with some struggle and some discomfort. If it's not, it tells us we are not struggling enough. We're not trying enough. We're not pushing hard enough if there's no struggle. That doesn't mean that every day should be getting up in dread and in desperation. Because sometimes that struggle doesn't have to be full of despair and anxiety. When I'm exercising, I'm putting my muscles into a struggle, but it's not out of desperation or fear. It's out of enjoyment. I'm doing something I want to do. When I'm writing, I'm working hard to put my words down in ways that make sense. There's a struggle to it, but it's a fulfilling struggle. So I'm not suggesting that life should just be always a struggle. I am suggesting that if there is no discomfort and no struggle, we're not stretching. We're not moving to our potential. It may be fulfilling struggle. It may be fulfilling discomfort. But if there is no discomfort, if there is no struggle, we have fallen into the cultural notion of don't be uncomfortable. And that usually means that we're really playing the game of don't be afraid. Growth comes in struggle. And I invite you to step into that and find some places of struggle. Find some places of discomfort that you know you want to grow into. We don't have to struggle everywhere in life, but we want to find some places that are meaningful and purposeful enough that we move towards the fear, that we courageously face life and move towards that. One of my favorite quotes is from John Shedd. John said, "A ship in harbor is safe, but that is not what ships are built for." What are you built for? What's life calling for you to do? How is life calling you to set aside your fears, to set aside your fear of discomfort, to set aside a fear of not having enough, not being loved enough, and not being good enough, that pulls you into a life where you learn to thrive not because of a lack of struggle, but through the struggle, because of the struggle? When you set aside the fear, you grow. What are you meant for? What are you built for? Okay, now is the time for me to ask you to give me some feedback. What do you like to hear about in the podcast? What would you like us to tackle in this podcast? Leave some suggestions in the comment section below if you're listening on the blog. If you're not listening on the blog at Thriveology.com, you can also email me at podcast@Thriveology.com. That's podcast@Thriveology.com, and tell me what you're thinking. Otherwise, I wish you the best as you continue to work to thrive in your life. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best of a thriving life.
Listening to the Thriveology podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled T-H-R-I-V-E-O-L-O-G-Y. It's your life. Time to live it.